590 WKZO is the trifecta. It's Roger and Jim today. Trifecta brought to you in part by Theater Kalamazoo, home to more than a dozen producing theaters. Producing theaters in Southwest Michigan. More information, visit theaterkalamazoo.com for a full listing of theaters and upcoming shows. Good stuff. 80 degrees right now at 590 WKZO. It's nice to have you here. We are Tiger baseball tonight, by the way. They finish up the series against the Cleveland Indians. Now, we're looking at the radar, and there is rain headed towards the Cleveland area, but we're not quite sure exactly what's going to happen. So we'll just keep an eye on things. And if we have rain delay, we have rain delay, and we'll stick with it. So these things happen. Max Scherzer is going after number 14 tonight. Woo-hoo!
How long do they play in Cleveland?
Just tonight's the last game. Then they come back home six games, three against the White Sox, including one of Rogers' favorite time of 12:40 in the afternoon on a weekday.
And they're 2.5 games in front of the second place.
So even if they lose tonight.
I knew that.
There you go. Hey!
I know. I'm actually paying attention to
this is.
Now.
I'm telling you. They play a three-game set with the White Sox, and then they host the Texas Rangers before they take off the All-Star break. So,
how long is the All-Star break?
It will be Monday, the 15th of July, through Thursday, the 18th. The game will be played on Tuesday, the 16th, in New York City at Citi Field, which is the home stadium for the New York Mets.
Why do they take so much time off?
They have the contests, before All-Star game, and then they take a couple of days off.
What kind of contest?
Home run derby and
I know nothing of that.
Yeah. Okay. That's the one that Justin Verlander wanted to participate in. Yeah. Cancer bad himself. No, that's right. All right, so this article comes out. The Mackinac Center of Public Schools ranking of Michigan elementary and middle schools.
Uh-huh.
The Mackinac Center analysis looked at test scores and participation in the subsidized lunch program, rating schools based on how they performed compared to schools with similar rates of poverty. Now, there have been many studies done, and that there's a recognition there, so to speak, that most people believe that raw test scores are a good way to evaluate educational effectiveness, but apparently the Mackinac Center has realized that's wrong. And that sociodemographics, as Julie put it in her article, have a lot to do with what's going on. In other words, your child's educational quality of life is affected more by their outside life than what happens in the classroom sometimes. Because what happens in the classroom sometimes is sometimes it's tough, no matter how well the teacher can convey the material. If you're hungry or you have a home life that is less than adequate, that's going to have a bigger effect on your test scores than having education thrown at you for six hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty much a given. So this is why
you're saying the other 18 hours a day make a difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. And this is why, if you look at the rankings, and we're looking at Van Buren County right now, and then I'll go to Kalamazoo, that three of the top schools in the state are Pullman Elementary School, Covert Middle School, and Bloomingdale Elementary School. All of three conventional schools, rural districts. But of those three, Pullman Elementary has a 91% involvement in the free lunch. Covert Middle School has a 94.3. Bloomingdale does have a 66.4. But there's 98.2%, 97.8%, 93.4%. They're very high-ranking schools in this poll. Let's go to Kalamazoo.
And explain to me the connection between the subsidized lunch and performance?
I think what they're doing is they're comparing. The comparison is between school districts that have comparable sociodemographic rates. In other words, they're trying to compare apples to apples here. They're taking test scores and participation in a subsidized lunch program, and rating schools based on how they perform compared to schools with similar rates of poverty, for instance. So if you have a school, see, here's, and this is where some people have some issues, is that high poverty districts such as Kalamazoo, which apparently is, Three Rivers and Bloomingdale are outperforming districts such as Mattawan, Portage, and Gull Lake that consistently post the highest test scores in the region. They have high test scores. They have low percentages of free or reduced lunch. So what they're doing, I think, Roger, is they're taking districts of similar sociodemographic data, and they're comparing those.
And so they're just using the number of students eligible for subsidized lunches as an indication of poverty in that school district. Okay.
And they're taking...
So it isn't somehow related to giving people lunches. They're just using lunches as a way to identify... Okay.
As a part of the data.
Yeah.
So in other words, they would compare... schools such as, let's see here, let's go to Kalamazoo, for instance.
Prairie Ridge Elementary is number 8.
Indian Prairie is number 1. Winchell is number 2. Amberley and Portage is number 3. Vicksburg is number 4. And Sunset Lake Elementary in Vicksburg. Vicksburg Middle School, actually, is number 4. And a school that I used to go to, Haverhill,
Number 6. The next one down, Greenwood Elementary. That's where I went to early L.
Mm-hmm. Did you really?
Yeah. I went there through second grade, and then I went to Millwood Elementary for third through sixth, and then to Millwood Junior High.
The percentage of free lunch, let's run down the first five elementary schools, not middle school, because I know the middle school's in there, but I'm going to take just elementary schools here. Indian Prairie has 33.2, Winchell is 30.6, Amberley 31.8, Sunset Lake is 28.4, and Haverhill has the largest amount at 37.2. But those are all within shot range.
Greenwood Elementary is 64.4.
That's almost double what a lot of
the rest
rates
of the
are.
School.
And the next one down is Prairie Ridge Elementary. It's 65%. Those would be, I think, the first four would be in the same kind of comparison group, possibly, because their percentage is there. That they're comparing apples to apples here. Now, what I don't understand is the formula they use to combine the free lunch percentage and the CAP score. That much I don't know. And then they give each school a ranking, whether it be A through F, whatever.
Yeah,
two schools got F, one in Kalamazoo and one in Climax Scotts.
You know what Mark Twain said? Lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Yeah.
And understanding the relationship between these various factors they're using would certainly skew the data here.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes to trusting your source for the information. And the Mackinac Center has so little credibility that I question the whole thing.
Going on in the article, there are a lot of people that have some issues with. There was some online comments. One said, "Is this just a feel-good exercise?" That maybe we can't blame schools for some of the test scores because of the socioeconomic data that's coming out. In other words, the teachers are doing the best they can, but because of whatever home life these children have, it has that big an effect on them it's affecting their test scores despite what the teachers are doing. Now, how you judge that or gauge that, Raj, that's, again, I think, the $100,000 question.
Yeah.
I mean, as a teacher, and again, I'm going to go back to when I was at the charter school in Kalamazoo, you could tell when students were bugged by being hungry or being distracted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a child, I'll use an example and no names, but he came into my classroom early in the morning in tears because he and his mom had just become homeless. Now, from a teaching standpoint, I have to stop being a teacher And I have to start being not necessarily a friend, but a confidant to this kid, because there is not one word or one thing that I'm going to say to him all day long that's going to stay with him educationally, mm-hmm. because he's homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And that is affecting his entire world. And, you know, teachers know that's the best, but teachers know that. They can sense when that happens. They can see it sometimes without the student even telling them. But I could tell when I had students that came in were distracted because they were hungry, because maybe they hadn't gotten any sleep the night before. And it's so tough. Those are those variables that it doesn't matter how many studies you do, you know, that have an effect on things, you know, whether it has a blatant effect, like, you know, in my case, I don't know why my students didn't do well on the test. I don't know. But the simple fact of the matter is, if your home life is affecting your overall being, it's, yeah, you're going to have a heck of a time trying to get through to that student or students. And that happens a lot because of their hungry or their living situation, or, you know, what's going on at home with as far as other siblings, or, you know, whether the parents are there half the time. You know, there's a lot of this. Now, there's a comment down here. The Mackinac Center rated Pullman Elementary in Bloomingdale School District as the top performing elementary school in a six-county region. Now, Julie says, quote, "That's great news for Pullman, but less than half of the students test proficient in reading, and less than a third test proficient in math. The number one ranking comes from the fact that 91% of their students are low income. Therefore, they outperform the expectation of the school because of the amount of free and reduced lunches." So if I'm guessing right, and correct me if I'm wrong, Raj, correct me if I'm wrong here. If you have a school that has an above, you know, I'm say 80% and above for free and reduced lunch program,
mm-hmm.
the state pretty much expects you to not be a high performer as far as tests go. And when you reach a certain level, maybe you're exceeding what the expectations are. Is that something we really want to use as a benchmark? I'm just asking.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. Yeah, you got 91, you got 90 plus percent of your kids that have a free and reduced lunch, which means, yes, you're in a low-income area. And it means that they're getting a good meal there at the school. But is it the other part of the day when they're not there? If you're overcoming that to a certain, is there a certain level to which you overcome that where the state goes, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Well,
and are you pigeonholing those kids?
Julie, in the last paragraph of her article here, it's a victory but a hollow one for Pullman students. The Mackinac Center should be congratulated, I don't know that, but giving high poverty schools their due. But that such an analysis is even necessary underscores the troubling inequities in our society.
True words.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes back to that evaluation model, no matter which one you use, okay,
mm-hmm.
that people pigeonhole constantly, because there is no one silver bullet when it comes to using test scores to evaluate whether or not your children are doing what they're supposed to be doing, unless you get incredibly high scores. Then you don't know whether you're teaching to the test. Are they teaching to the test? Or are the kids really excelling that much because of what the teachers are doing? You would hope it would be that, and what the administration is doing. But again, evaluation is such a four-letter word in education that, it's a very, very true paragraph. You know, there we've got problems in the way we evaluate our kids, but we also have to realize that because of the stratification,
mm-hmm.
the demographics and whatnot, that, yeah, there's always going to be the issue. So, yeah, I guess at what point do you say, well, and the Mackinac Center apparently figured it out, at what point do you say this is the benchmark where you, if you go above this, you exceed, even though you're not anywhere near where you should be as far as test scores go, but because of the group of kids you have, you're an overachiever.
But I guess I'm not seeing what the Mackinac Center is gleaning from this data. Is their only point that there are some exceptional schools that have some schools that have large numbers of poor students perform decently?
I think,
is that their
point?
I mean,
I think their point is in here, there are several schools in this area that are overachieving in test scores, even though they may be low test scores, because of the socio-demographic data they have to deal with.
Hmm.
You know, 91% of free and reduced lunch. Well, given that the economic level, the fact that you're getting what you're getting is above average.
Yeah.
That's what I think they mean. And again, it's one of those things we can pick apart all day long, but the simple fact of the matter is they're, you know.
I get skeptical because it comes from the Mackinac Center. What can I say?
Well, we're going to make you happy here, maybe.
We are?
Roger's going to rant, and he's going to rant about one of his favorite things on the face of the earth.
Oh, proof that God loves us.
Coming up. It is the trifecta, 590 WKZO. 590 WKZO. It is the trifecta. It's Roger. It's Jim today. Having fun.
This is a serious discussion
we're going to have now for a couple of minutes.
So no screwing around.
All right. By the way, the trifecta brought to you in part by the University Roadhouse. The patio is open at the University Roadhouse. Lunch, dinner, or drinks, as long as it involves smashed potatoes, Roger will be happy.
Yeah.
Out on the patio at the University Roadhouse.
Beer.
And according to Bob, we may not have... Yeah, maybe spotty rain, so it should be good.
Yeah, yeah. All this
right,
weekend,
so,
especially
all right,
nice.
So Roger's going to cut loose here because we're talking about beer.
And there's talk about cans becoming popular again.
So what's wrong with that? Beer is supposed
why
to be.
Why would you put the nectar of the gods in a metal can?
Because it's easy to keep cold?
Yeah. But it tastes bad.
Does it?
Well, it does to me. And although I'm looking at an article that where they who did this? Huffington Post. They got a group of people together and had five beers that are available both in bottles and cans. And they poured the beers into a cup so the test people wouldn't know what they were drinking. And 51% of the time, people could tell it came from a can.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good clip.
Well, guessing would get them to 50%.
Yeah, yeah, so.
So it's not that significant. But when asked, which do you prefer, over 70% of beer drinkers prefer it in a bottle. And I'm sorry Jay's not here because he and I had a conversation earlier about the craft brews that are now putting their beer in cans.
Yeah.
And he is a proponent of cans for reasons I don't know. That's why I wish he was here.
It might be portability, and let me explain why. Because you can take cans to the beach. But you can't take bottles because bottles are glass. And there's still a lot of places that won't let you take glass containers into an area.
That's very simply resolved.
And how do you do that?
Don't go to the beach. That doesn't mean I want beer in cans.
I don't think that's a choice for some people. Thank you.
Oh.
Yeah. What if they want to go to the beach? Or they want to go, you know, someplace. Actually, a park in a lot of places. Won't let you take bottles, whether it be pop or beer or whatever. That's something that, I don't know. Since I don't drink beer very often.
Me either.
Excuse me. Hang on. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Bob has a thought on beer in cans or bottles.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're doing all right. So you have a thought on this?
Yeah, actually, what really started the whole bottle thing was in the beginning of craft brewing, most brewers are going from bottle lines to can lines. And so old bottlers were available for these startups to buy at a reasonable price. And then what has happened is the myth was people thought, well, craft beer, good beer, only in glass. And now as these breweries are switching their canning lines over, canning lines are now affordable for the smaller breweries again. But what it does do for the breweries is cans are very light, and it really reduces shipping costs, which makes it even more affordable for breweries to go to because they don't have to pay for all the weight of that shipping of their product. And the can technology has gotten to the point now where the liners are so good, it's almost better than glass at this point.
All right, so now...
Wait a minute.
Okay, Bob, you've raised the hackles on my friend over here.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell the difference in the new cans or bottles? I mean, can you...
There really is very little difference. I used to actually run a canning line and a bottling line, and we could never really tell the difference. The difference is bottles allow light in. Light spoils beer. And so sometimes you can tell the difference, and it's actually not as good in the bottle because it wasn't stored properly out of light.
Is that why beer bottles are that brownish color to reduce the amount of light that comes in?
And that's why I keep... Why I keep mine in a unlighted refrigerator.
A purist.
Yeah, you know, I've made sure that light goes out.
Bob, let me tell you something. Roger doesn't keep beer around long enough for light to get to it.
So, Bob, you appear knowledgeable on this. This test that Huffington Post did where people really couldn't tell the difference, that passes a reasonableness test in your mind? And
absolutely.
It's just blind prejudice on my part that God doesn't want us to drink beer out of cans.
Actually, I wouldn't say it's prejudice so much as, like I had said before, the craft beer had switched to glass because of available equipment, and the perception was there that it was better or worse because it's a craft beer.
Yeah.
But really, it was just built out of necessity.
Okay. Well, and the beer was better, but it was because it was craft beer, not because it was in a bottle versus a can.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we got that right.
All right.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Hey, thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Appreciate it very much. All right, and we have a text here. When you're canoeing, unopened cans will float from boat to boat, and the bottles will sink if you're trying to pass one over.
There's an easy solution to that one, too. These issues, these are just straw dogs. These are easily overcome. Don't go into a canoe with beer.
There is a group on Facebook that you really need to join.
And that
beer
group?
Beer Snobs.
Beer Snobs?
Beer Snobs. Yes.
Is Oberon a snobby beer?
If they put it in cans, you'd have a fit.
I think they are going
to.
Yeah.
Oh.
I won't drink it, yeah. I'll give it a test.
Oh, okay.
I'll do it live during the trifecta. I'll have somebody put a can and a bottle in a cup.
It is the Trifecta 590 WKZL. Roger, when you're right, you're right.
Well, you start talking about beer, it just keeps me... Hang on.
Yeah.
I've got to stop what I'm doing and go talk to the fella.
I had to mention beer, can, bottle.
I not only heard the footsteps, I felt the footsteps.
Dun,
I mean,
dun, boom, 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 boom.
Before we get into the suds discussion, the Trifecta brought to you in part by Asthma Allergy Centers of Southwest Michigan. For the office nearest you, visit asthmaallergycenters.com and Lake Michigan Credit Union, the best place for your money. Learn more at lmcu.org.
Roger, here's what I will tell you, Raj. And I overheard a statement that's not the way God intended it. Isn't that what you said?
Uh-huh.
That's what I overheard. And
he
you're
doesn't
talking...
want it in cans.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
I was on, and I wrote a blog about this on the beer blog at WKZR.com. I was in the same camp for a decade and a half. Almost my entire beer drinking life. From that moment that I had my first blats out of a can at 21, where I said, I'll never drink beer out of a can ever again.
Yeah.
I think that had
you know,
to do with
it was
blats.
The blats that was
bad,
not
the
can.
That's what I learned. And here, I'll have to tell you, again, one of the reasons is I'd been reading a lot. Craft brewers across the country, this is a big deal. This is the next phase. It's a lot cheaper to can the beer than it is to bottle the beer. And I tried... The brewery is Oscar Blues out of Colorado. I tried their Dale's Pale Ale. I told you, I'm hooked. Well, the darn thing's out of a can. I actually, Raj, didn't buy it for about 2 months, knowing full well on every beer site I'd ever seen, everybody raves about this beer. And I said, it's in a can. It can't be very good.
Right.
It's in a can. It's got to suck. It's in a can. It can't be that. It can't even be drinkable. I had it so deep ingrained in my head.
I'm
telling you, it is delicious. Get over your canophobia.
Well, you know, we had a caller who told us that the reason craft brewers started using glass exclusively is because there was a surplus of glass bottling equipment available.
Sure.
And it was far less expensive for them to buy that used equipment than to set up to
not a doubt
bottle in cans.
Oh, yeah.
We had a couple of people who, one who said, oh, that was Jim that said you can't take it to the beach in glass.
And what did he say?
There's an easy solution to that.
Red Solo cup?
No, don't go to the beach.
Oh, you can't
also,
do that.
We had somebody said that, you know, unopened cans will float from canoe to canoe and the bottles will sink.
And what I suggested there is not, it's not you can't go canoeing with beer, but if a bottle sinks, there are losses.
Do you have a moment of silence then if the bottle sinks?
Oh, of course.
Now, okay. The same texter.
We have services.
The same texter texts back and said, no beer in the canoe. That's the most offensive thing I've ever heard Roger say.
And Lord knows I've said some offensive things.
I mean, ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth?
So
I got to get over my prejudice on.
I don't know which, again, and I don't know which line they're going to bottle, but Bell's is going to can. Bell's going to can. I mean,
if they can Oberon, I'm going to do an on-air blind taste test.
No, you won't, but you'll do it and you'll tell us about it afterwards.
Oh, okay.
But you will do it.
I can't do it here.
Can we bring
huh?
the cop in?
No.
Cop got a hat.
I
just like when I had two.
Dr. Johnny Fever.
I know.
Okay.
No, you've got to get over it. On it, and honestly, there are very good beers being canned nowadays. They just are, and the good brewers, the folks that are, you know, the folks you wouldn't figure that were going to can are beginning to can.
Yeah.
And Ron, I did say the technology was better.
The technology is much better. Again, that Dale's Pale Ale that I try is delicious. I love it. It's fantastic, and it's out of a can.
I keep ranting on politicians who get new information and can't change their mind.
Oh. Yeah, Rod.
And
just telling you.
I have found the enemy, and it's me.
Mm-hmm. Got to get over it, man.
If that's the worst thing, canned beer, then you're in good shape, dude.
Well, but we all have prejudices.
Yes, we kind of do.
Yeah. You guys are going to – I'm going to have to rely on you and your expertise.
I know.
Because I don't drink beer.
I've tried enough.
Have you really?
I have. I really have.
You're an aficionado. You've gone past aficionado.
No,
I'm
up. I'm maybe not that level, but boy, you know, I have a pretty good palate.
Well, let me ask you this while we got you here, because you know, we don't get to see you very often.
I know.
The heck are you?
I'm good. Busy.
When you were over in Milwaukee, did you see some craft beer from Michigan over there?
Yeah, Bell's is over there.
Okay.
Oberon?
I didn't see Oberon. I saw Two Hearted. They may have Oberon there. I didn't.
I was wondering, you know, because Wisconsin, of course, is, you know.
They don't do it. You know, it's funny with that. You call it the beer capital of the world, but honestly, it's the mass appeal beers that dictate over there.
Yeah.
They don't. They've got some good craft brewers, but nothing like we do over on this side of the lake.
I mean, what's the beer your in-laws are going to bring
over? New Glarus, Spotted Cow. You'll like
Spotted
it. That's
Cow.
That's your kind. I like some of the other stuff. They do a pretty good. They do a pretty mean IPA there.
Okay.
But the Spotted Cow is their Oberon. So it's their mass appeal. You might like that.
Yeah.
From New Glarus Brewery.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you could probably put money on it.
Yeah, I would say so.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I grew up in Iron River, Michigan, which is in the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah.
And they had the beer up there in a bottle. It spells like Bosch, but they say Bush. And it was cheap, and it was very good. But on the Wisconsin side, they had Hams.
From the land of Sky Blue Waters,
I love the bear.
In a can.
Mm-hmm.
In a can. But Bosch was probably more superb.
Well, Hams was a mass-produced beer, too. Was this Bosch just a local brewery, or?
Yeah, it's up in the Upper Peninsula.
Okay. Well, I will, even though I don't drink beer, I would be the first one to admit that I bet a craft brewer is better than mass produced
beer. Yeah, but to tell you the truth, my favorite beer is the old fire brewed Stroh's in a bottle.
Oh. There you go.
You and my father-in-law.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, no, I used to take Stroh's back with me to Germany.
Uh-huh.
And just the people from Michigan.
That's bootlegging. Yeah. No, that's east of the Mississippi.
No, yeah. Customs knew
don't
that
hesitate to announce on the air that you broke the law by smuggling beer into a country that has very strict laws on beer.
Do you know that I had to go through customs in the United States and through Germany? So I went.
Why did you bring this here? I did have to explain
one time what it was because it's a German name, Stroh. So yeah, and I told them where it was from and everything. And they said, why are you bringing it back? And I said, well, because I'm stationed in Launchdol. And there's some people from Michigan there, and I bring that, and I bring the Verners back, and we have a little party, so it's good.
But,
No, I agree. Yeah, Stroh's isn't bad.
My prejudice against cans is going back to when I, in college, drank Meisterbrau.
Exactly.
In a can.
Blatz. I mean, Blatz. Meisterbrau. You name it. It wasn't the can. It was the beer.
And as my taste in beer has matured, I've gone to the craft brewers, and it's just good beer that happens to be in a bottle.
Look, my dad used to drink Kingsbury out of a bottle. Does that mean the bottle was better? No, it was still Kingsbury.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to try a can of something that should be good.
All right. And you tell me that it's not good because it's the can.
Okay. If I can taste metal in it.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't had a chance to do that.
Okay.
I'm just telling you, it's pretty decent. Get over yourself, Roger.
Okay.
You want to go back to doing whatever it was you were doing?
Yeah, I got to go back to doing whatever I was doing. But it was
well, thanks
senior.
For stopping in.
Thank
yeah.
you for stopping in.
He was a good senior guy.
Yeah, it was nice seeing you, too. You know, it's every once in a while.
You know, he still wears that, hello, my name is Jay tag.
Yeah, I know. Well, to the texter that says, where's Jay? Well, there he was. So
you missed him.
You missed, well, you know.
Here and gone,
but that's okay. Let's take up a quick topic really quickly here. I guess a quick topic would be really quickly. There was an opinion piece written over the weekend about cities and governmental units thumbing their nose at document requests, the FOIA instant, the Freedom of Information Act. And people have been running into this. Apparently, FOIA, and if they FOIA a request, obviously you're supposed to provide the information. However, in big requests, I think, doesn't the requester have to pay the cost of the printing or something, or if they want something, huge.
Yes.
It's supposed to be read broadly, according to this, with disclosure of documents freely given. However, there are a growing number of municipalities, cities, towns, townships, whatever, that are utilizing some sort of scenario saying that the information has to be withheld because they don't want to compromise an investigation. Now, you realize what the problem with this is, don't you?
What?
Well, the person who's requesting the information can't dig in and find out what the investigation is that's keeping them from getting the FOIA stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Well, and the other thing that this gives rich people the advantage, because they can afford to pay for a FOIA request, where a poor person who might question what the government is doing might not have the resources to pay for the documents.
Or to hire a lawyer to sue whoever it is that's not giving you what you're supposed to get.
So is this just a scam to avoid disclosing information to the taxpayers?
I think, and I'm not pointing a finger at any specific municipality, Lansing, but I think there's a situation, and I'm going to explain that in a second or two. I think what happens is that resources are so tight with some cities and townships, especially when you're cutting back hours and doing everything else. They don't have the manpower or the time to do an extensive FOIA for somebody, even if it's for a legitimate reason. They can't afford the time or the effort to do it. And that may be a cop out, but still the fact of the matter is they may not. It just depends. Now I'll get to Lansing in a second. Phil, how you doing?
Very good. Back a good mid-1980s, I made a request of a county sheriff's office that I wanted some certain information. I sent it in by registered mail, return receipt requested, deliverable to the addressee only. It was ignored, and after 35 days, I contacted a friend of mine who was a Capitol guard in Lansing. His close personal friend, Bart Stupek, was a state policeman who had just become an attorney. Stupek says, yes, I'll handle that for zero fee. He says, I just want a share of what we win.
Okay.
Eventually, we won $500 a day for 30 days.
Wow.
Plus, all the information had to be hand-delivered to me.
Yeah, did you get it?
You betcha.
All right. There you go. So you got 15,000, well, 7,500 because you had to split.
You
got
to follow the exact letter of the law.
Okay.
Too many people are just being frivolous as all hell, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or whatever. They're not following the law, and that's why they're getting spit on.
All right.
Yeah. Well, if
thanks,
there are
though,
millions of people lined up making FOIA requests, you could bankrupt a local government.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you could.
They just couldn't do anything but print documents.
Now, the example that I was using was the city of Lansing does the Common Ground Festival. They allocate to what they call the Lansing Entertainment and Public Facilities Authority, or LEPFA. But the city doesn't want the public to know how that money is being spent for Common Ground. And a FOIA request was put forth. And they're apparently the Lansing City Pulse, which is a newspaper maybe, wanted to know what was going on with Common Ground. They wanted budget details because it is a taxpayer-funded event. Well, war broke out. Well, semi-war broke out. An arrangement between the Pulse and LEPFA, which actually advertising was traded for tickets, was halted without a word. The ad copy never arrived. And in the meantime, the city just shut down, claiming it had no records regarding the Common Ground spending, saying that it was LEPFA. So this is part of what I was talking about. This is probably the most high-profile example of this. But this is not something that is just few and far between. It's happening more often, and it has caught the attention of some state representatives, which have decided that maybe it's not such a hot idea, and that maybe transparent government, especially when it comes to FOIA, that it might be a little, might be well that they do it. So we'll see whether or not the state lawmakers, can force the enforcement of a legal law.
Is that HB 4001 that you're referring to?
HB 4001, indeed. Okay. So, yes, indeed, it would be. Max goes for number 14. We'll talk about that, Mr. Sports. Get your hat ready.
Who's Max?
Trifecta. 590 WKZO getting ready to wrap up this edition of the Trifecta. It's Rogers, Jim. Jake stopped by earlier and talked beer. It was good. A couple of other sports things that we want to talk about. Congratulations. We have a new Western basketball assistant coach, Larry Farmer, who has a UCLA connection, as does Steve Hawkins. Larry Farmer played for the late John Wooden, and he is now an assistant coach here at Western Michigan University. Not too bad.
Cool. Are we going to get to this Max of whom you spoke?
Yes, we're going to talk about Max next. Max Scherzer has begun the season 13-0. If he wins tonight, he's going to try to become the second pitcher to open up 14-0 in the last 27 years, the last one to do it. Roger Clemens did it in 1986. The American League record is 15-0, set back in 1937 by Johnny Allen of Cleveland and then Dave McNally of Baltimore in 1969.
Who did this Clemens guy play for?
Boston.
And who does this Max guy play for?
The Tigers.
Oh.
Max Scherzer.
Oh.
Okay. Scherzer.
I should know that last name.
Yes, you should, yes.
Scherzer?
He's one of two pitchers off the Tigers staff named as an all-star by Jim Leland. Yeah, big surprise there. He and Justin Verlander are going to be in Citi Field. And hopefully Max will start the game. I'm hoping that happens. The Tigers are 2.5 games, as Roger said, in front
of
the Indians. They win tonight. They're 3.5, if not, they're a game and a half. But they're going to leave Cleveland in first place. And Cleveland's just hoping that they can split the series, but I don't think that's going to happen. So So.
You think they're going to win tonight?
I think the Tigers are going to win. I think that the rain's going to go away and that they are going to win. So.
And they're playing Thursday afternoon.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you'd remember that. I'm just thinking. That's like right there in the front, you know.
Who do they play Thursday afternoon?
The White Sox.
Ah, in Chicago?
Yeah. All right, we're back tomorrow, 3 o'clock, same bad time, same bad channel, 5 o'clock. Afternoon news is next. It is 590 WKZO. Tigers tonight, 640.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.